You heard the legend.
Yeah!
Kickstart your day with the man who dominated the field like no other.
Carey!
Wayne Carey. And the sports journo who's done it all, Mark Howard. Yeah! The Dead Set Legends do breakfast on Triple M.
The big man is beside me. Always nice to be in the same building. He smells magnificent. Looking good. Hello, Ducky.
Good morning, Howie. Good morning, listeners. Beautiful morning. I tell you what, though, I've had a rough night.
Well, drama has unfolded at the Duck residence this morning.
A little different to the drama that has over the years.
No, but police.
This seriously, I got a text at 1 a.m. this morning.
Yes.
Didn't get it until I got up for radio this morning at 5 o'clock to say that my babysitter is at the hospital. Her sister's broken her leg. So I've got Stephanie flying to Sydney at 6:30 for a day's work.
What about little Charlotte?
Well, so little Charlotte is coming in. She's being dropped off here in half an hour. She has to come in. There's nothing more we can do.
So it's Howie Duck and a baby on the Dead Set Legends this morning.
So 1.5 men and a baby.
You're the half, are you?
Yeah.
You shouldn't refer to yourself as half a man, Ducky boy.
Can you believe that, though? There's nothing more you can do.
There's a couple of things that need to be analysed. What was the babysitter's sister doing at 1 a.m. to break her leg?
Oh, well,
do you think it's true, or do you think it's a late excuse?
I was going to say that it's not often, though, a babysitter comes around at 6 a.m. So it was a 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. shift this morning because I'd be off at 9, give me a little bit of time to do a couple of things and then get home. Maybe it might have been a little bit too early. I'm not too sure. So I'll get to the bottom of it. But just to let you know that there will be a baby in here soon.
This is going to be a good show. Ducky, as you know, I live down the coast, down at Bowen Heads, and my two kids, the Big Penguin and the Pickle, they're the only two that don't go for Geelong in the entire area. When you have the footy day, everyone's got the Cats jumpers on. Was there excitement down on the Bellarine yesterday when Paddy Dangerfield signed? Gee, there were some excited people.
Well,
down
it's
there.
The biggest unkept secret for the whole year, wasn't it?
That
he was going to end up back there. And obviously on the back pages of all the papers today and all over the news, him in the Geelong jumper doesn't suit him. Not yet.
No.
Just doesn't look right to me. But it's a boy coming home, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And you can't begrudge anyone for wanting to do that.
No.
You know, he's given great service to the Adelaide Footy Club, won the best and fairest this year, did all of the things that you'd want someone to do in that position, and now just a boy wanting to get home to his roots.
Yeah, he'd mentioned that there was 100 Dangerfields down in the area. Anyway, let's have a listen to what Paddy had to say. He had a chat on the Rush Hour yesterday to Bill and Gary about that very fact that he wanted to come home.
You know, I grew up down the coast. I played for Anglesey, and then when I'd go watch AFL football, I'd sit on the Moorabool Street side and stand on a milk crate. So, you know, that was AFL footy for me. That was Cadinia Park, and it'll be a pretty special feeling to be able to run out on that ground and have that as the home base. So it's certainly very exciting.
Yeah, he talked about the fact that he'd be able to go fishing and surfing and come to work. I'm going to make a statement now. I'd like to take some credit for the fact that Paddy has come to the Cats, because whenever the surf's pumping, I take a photo and I send it through to him and say, and I've said it to him on Twitter before, how are the waves at Glenelg today when it's absolutely pumping at Winky? Obviously no surf in Adelaide. So he loves the surf and he loves to go fishing.
There's a little bit of surf in Adelaide. You've got to travel a little bit to get there. But if obviously he's from there,
you know,
so the surf is right on your doorstep.
Big sharks down that way as well. You want it to be a touch careful.
And the other thing, his state of mind and his strength of mind, talk about it doesn't matter what sport you play, but that strength that you have to have, to know that he's wanted to do that all year and once again still be able to do what he did is a massive tick. He'll make a big difference, and I notice he's already saying, oh, look, just because I'm here, don't think that we're, you know, premiership favourites or anything like that.
Well, that's not what the people of Bowen Heads are
thinking. Like,
he's playing at full
happy.
Back. He's in the middle and he's going to full forward. What did you think of the deal itself? Picks 9 and 28 and the young man Dean Gore. What they didn't do, Geelong, which was good for them, they didn't have to give away a future pick, which I don't know, but reading between the lines, they're probably trying to keep a future pick for Lachie Henderson, 9-28 and a young player. What do you think?
Oh, look, it's probably fair, although you probably think the Cats right now have got the better end of the bargain, because you just don't know how those picks are going to perform.
That's right.
So right now they're winning, but it's interesting because of all the other trades, and we talk about Carlisle, already St Kilda are saying they're not prepared to give up pick 5 for Carlisle. So Just so much to play out, and we spoke about it yesterday, and we'll probably have a little bit more of a chat about it later on. But well done to the Cats. They've got the big fish that they've always wanted.
And the other one they're talking about is Scotty Selwood, and I noticed last night some words out of West Coast. Their chief executive, Trevor Nisbet, called for a review of the whole free agency. He's quoted in the paper today, "The level of compensation for losing our vice-captain is totally inadequate. Why have restricted free agency and free agency compensation if you are to be treated with such disrespect?" Well, they're not happy in the West.
Well, let's not forget what Hawthorn lost. You know, they lost Buddy Franklin and they got bugger all for him. And then they went on and they've won the next three flags in a row.
Yeah.
So, you know.
The one that really interests me is Matty Suckling to the Western Bulldogs. Really nice player in a really good side at the Hawthorn Footy Club. Really good finisher. How do you think he'll go over there?
Hang on. Don't you dare say what I said during the year.
Which is what?
Well, when you're in a good team, your flaws and deficiencies get covered up. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, I'm not suggesting that.
That's what I suggested during the year and I got cut down. Well, because they're the simple facts. You're exactly right. There are players that are running around in that team, quite simply, if they went to another team, Howie, would not be the players they are.
You know what I call it? The Des Headland rule. Very nice player at Brisbane. Very nice player. Got the fourth, fifth defender. Went back over west and gets the number one or two and into a different game.
Well,
it's
spot on.
Brian Lake at the Peter Crimmins Medal. What an unbelievable career Brian ended up having. We'll get to a couple of his stats in a moment. But he spoke well, as he always does. He started by having a discussion about his family and what they meant to him.
To mum, to dad, they did it hard, had to come over here a fair bit of the time. They didn't stay at my house, I couldn't handle them. Well, when you're a father of three kids, we just got too much, so they stayed at my brother's house. Hence why I had to save money, because they had to pay for their accommodation. But I still love them, thank you. To my wife, Shannon, she's copped a shitload. She is absolute shitload. You can probably picture how much of a handful I am. She's warned me not to throw under the bus, which I did in my press conference, and I do admit I'm sorry for that. A lot of it was true, but a lot of it is my problem, my issue as well. I do enjoy myself, and sometimes I make her as the excuse. But thank you for the 14 years you've provided me. You've provided me with three beautiful children, a household that I want to come home to after every training session and be happy to be in. So thank you very much for that, Shannon.
A nice finish, but geez, he let fly a few bombs. I heard the other day, I saw him on the telly, I was having a chat to him about it, that the whole Portsy Polo incident when he first came to Hawthorn, he blamed that on his wife as well in his press conference, which I thought was extraordinary.
Well, that was a little apology to Seth.
Very little. 197 games for the Dogs, then he played 54 for Hawthorn, Brian Lake.
And he'll be remembered for the 54.
Well, three premierships in 54 games.
And a Norm Smith.
Yeah, quite extraordinary.
And played well. Well, played well in all the premierships.
And there'll be two highlights out of the last premiership. One will be Hodges banana from the boundary, and the other will be Brian Lake with that smother on the goal line.
Oh, exactly
that'll
right.
be the thing that'll be remembered from it. He obviously, the big incident with Drew Petrie, where he put him in the choker hold and he was the worst man in football on the back page of the paper. He addressed that at the Peter Crimmins Medal as well, Ducky boy.
I've enjoyed every 54 of those games that I've played for the Hawthorn Football Club. Probably should have played more, but I did get suspended. I'm retired now, so I can call Drew Petrie the possum. I don't care. Stuff him. Stuff him. He played dead. And let's hope Carolina Springs win the premiership next year.
Mark Rark's heavily involved down at Caroline Springs. They're trying to get him across, but he's had a whack at Drew, didn't he?
Drew Petrie the possum. do you reckon that might stick for the next year at the Kangaroos? It's very refreshing. I don't mind that.
It's fantastic.
That's good humour. And I reckon Drew might have been playing dead too.
But it's just fantastic to see there's so little of that in modern sport now. Well, you and I always come back to it. Then in America, they make these statements and it's entertainment and they realise that's part of the business. You say things like that in this part of the world, you get smashed down and you get put back in your box.
I'll tell you what, though, he was playing dead. When he woke up, he kicked 3 goals on Blakey in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Three premierships in 3 seasons. Maybe Mal Michael might have done a similar thing, arrived in Brisbane and got the 3. Yeah. But if you'd said to him, you come across, you get 1 premiership, he would have pinched himself to get 3, Ducky boy.
Oh, well, Howie, come on. Of course, it's just unheard of. He's just been quite remarkable. Good on him. And whatever he does, he'll do well.
Well, he did discuss that he might sort of slide into a bit of media. In fact, I think he might have had his eye on a Dead Set Legends sort of co-anchor spot.
Oh, did he? Good on him. You can have it.
Oh, come on. Come on. I tell you what, if you took your wage, you'd be getting more than you got at Hawthorn. He may have dominated the field in his time, but he's not dominating at the moment, the King, because the babysitter has called in at 1 a.m. to say she can't come this morning. And if you can hear that in the background, that's 10-month-old Charlotte Carey. Welcome to Two Men and a Baby Triple M. This is going to be a handful for the next 2 hours,
and that's
Doc.
That's not high throwing into audio,
no,
is it?
No, it's not. That's a real life baby in the studio.
Real life.
Can I first say she was premature, your little girl. Yep. So she was, how early did she come?
10 weeks early.
I tell you what, she stacked it on since then, big boy. She's been in a really nice paddock, hasn't she?
She's going okay. And she's on the move as well. But look, Howie, it's, as we said off the top, at 6 a.m. this morning, that there's nothing you can do.
No.
And that's the thing about children. There is nothing, it's not like a puppy where you can put it in the laundry with some water and
people have tried
it a little bit. A little bit of bread and milk.
Isn't it an extraordinary thing with a baby? She came through and everyone immediately is just transfixed. They are the greatest time wasters, babies, aren't they? Especially little beautiful ones like your little fat chubby one down there at the moment, who's now rolling around on the studio floor as we speak. It's like having Mick Molloy in here at 7 anyway, isn't it?
It is. It is, but it's all worth it, Howie.
What's your favourite thing? I've obviously got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. What's your favourite thing about being a dad?
When you get home or when you wake up and you get a smile.
Mm.
That's it.
And what's the least favourite thing?
When your babysitter says at 1 o'clock and you have to go to work. And here I am now trying to do both jobs. But what about yourself? What's your favourite and least favourite?
The greatest moment in my entire time as being a father was the day the big penguin, my 3-year-old, as you know, he only operates and will answer the name Big Penguin, the day he got rid of nappies, so there was no more nappies in the house. That was been my greatest day as a dad because I was never a fan of the nappies. I've just spent a week at Bathurst and you come home and your kids treat you like you're, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo himself, don't they? I think that's the best thing. And the hardest thing is going away from them, especially when, you know, they get upset when you walk out the door. And last year, I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old at that stage, obviously, and I spent 6 weeks at the Winter Olympics in Russia and 6 weeks at the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. And my daughter could understand, but the little bloke wouldn't understand. Yeah. He just didn't understand that amount of time away. So that's difficult. So it actually makes me think at that stage about all those in the forces and that serve. And, you know, they're off to these places where to dangerous places, Afghanistan or wherever, but they're away for a year or 14 months.
Well, often they leave before the baby's born, while their partner's pregnant.
Imagine how hard that would be to go and serve your country saying goodbye to your wife or your husband.
And then coming back and meeting them as a 1-year-old or a 1.5-year-old. It's, and that's why they deserve the respect that they get. They're off protecting our country and unfortunately their family, it does, it comes second to doing that.
What's her nickname, old Chubby Chops down there? Time for a break. An extraordinary little article in the paper today. It would be fair to say, I'm probably a little bit more knowledgeable on this area, that Tim Cahill is our greatest socceroo. Harry Kuehl, fantastic. Mark Viduka, fantastic. You go back in the past.
What about Bozza?
Bozza, a superstar. Just ask him. He would probably think he was. But Tim Cahill, the amount of goals he scored at important times for the Socceroos. Now, he's playing over in China at the moment.
He's been our best player for Australia.
My word, he has.
Not necessarily our best player overseas. There's been players perform better with their overseas teams.
But it's all
but
about
he's performed
for
best
country.
For our country.
Well, he's playing in the Chinese Super League at the moment. You've been across the season there. I think it's Shanghai Shenhua or something. And there was a discussion about whether he would be playing elsewhere, whether he'd go back to China. And people were saying, well, you know, the A-League, he is a bums on seats man.
Absolutely.
If there was, of all those players that have come out here, the one that would get me to go and watch
would
in
be
the A-League would be Tim Cahill. Extraordinary quotes in the paper today from Tim Cahill. He told Fox Sports News, "You can't have temptation if you've got no offers. There's never really been a relationship with me and the FFA, the Football Federation Australia, when it comes to that, or even A-League clubs. There's always been a question asked of me by the media, but never the question asked of the clubs or the FFA. It's what it is, but it's highly unlikely." From what Tim Cahill's saying, he hasn't been approached ever to come and play.
Surely now, after that, someone will approach him.
I know
the season, as we know, the season's just started. So we're only right at the start of the season. Week two, we're up to. So surely, I'm not sure whether they've got it in their salary cap or they're able to do that. It's probably too late. But you'd think that he'd get a game in the A-League.
Well, as I said, if
they'd want him to play in the A-League, not get a game. Of course he'd get a game.
If there's one fella that you're going to watch play, it's Tim Cahill.
Yep.
All right.
I'm with you.
Jake King is joining us at 7:30 to talk all things MotoGP. Craig Lowndes after 8 o'clock.
When you said that, Jake King talking about all things MotoGP, is that because he's got 9 Harleys that he's going to talk about?
It's because he rang our producer, Jake, said, "I want to come on. I want to talk about the MotoGP."
I've still got to discuss the push-up off.
Well, he did it at the Dead Set Legends on Grand Final day. In a minute, he did 100 push-ups in a minute. I've got it on my phone. I'll show you.
That is impossible.
Well, we'll play you the audio and we'll get
impossible.
Jake King. Well, we'll see. Maybe we can do it all now, right. Big boy.
Well, I'm sure he's got a spare minute. He'd just pump out 100.
The opinion piece. The editorial in the Herald Sun today features a young lady by the name of Ronda Rousey, who, well, it'd be fair to say she's probably the most visible female athlete on the planet, probably in front of Serena Williams.
Well, some people say the best athlete in the world.
Well, it's an extraordinary editorial. We'll hear from her in a moment. She spoke to The Hot Breakfast not long ago, but this article starts, and it packs a punch, pardon the pun, right off the top. August of 2008 in Beijing, China, and I was doing everything I could to break the arm of a woman I barely knew from Algeria. This is when she was at the Olympics in wrestling. She's now obviously a cage fighter, an MMA fighter, Ducky. "Yes, I'm a fighter," she says, "but I am not a violent person. I don't enjoy hurting people. If anyone gets hurt, it is not the aim of my actions. In fact, I prefer winning with no one getting hurt. It's an escape, an outlet. It's not a brawl. It's not gore and brutality. It's an art. Mixed martial arts, obviously, is what it's called. It's an opportunity for courage. It's an experience of overcoming, and I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't judge me for it." What do you think?
I think that's fantastically well written and good on her. It's a discipline, as she says. It's an art. There are a lot of people, obviously, against it. At the end of the day, it's a choice. It's a sport. Once again, some people disagree with the sport. She's obviously a highly, highly disciplined person, and the way she's articulated that,
highly
as in
intelligent,
doesn't, highly intelligent, doesn't like to hurt people, and some people would say, well, you do when you're in the ring. But it is. I agree. It's massive discipline. She's not out there in the street doing it against other people. She's doing it in there. She's fit. She's healthy. She's doing what she loves doing. Good on her.
This is her on The Hot Breakfast a couple of weeks ago, talking about the fact that they shouldn't call what she does cage fighting.
I think it's kind of unfair just to call it cage fighting. It's a really kind of a ignorant generalization. I really think it should be called mixed martial arts for a reason, and the word art is in there for a reason. I spent my whole life doing judo and competing in the Olympics, and everyone thought it was so pretty when I would do it then, and everything had pretty little Japanese names, but when I do it in a venue where I actually am able to make a living, suddenly it's barbaric. It doesn't make any sense.
There's Ronda Rousey on Triple M's Hot Breakfast.
We don't need to add any more than that. That is just succinct. It's to the point, and she's exactly right.
She says, she goes to the paragraph that really hit with me. "We live in a time of soft fabrics, air conditioning, and participation trophies," which we do. "We all have and sometimes need to feel a little uncomfortable to convince ourselves we're awake."
Yeah, she's
that rings true with me.
Oh, it does. And she's only a little woman, and she did a thing with Channel 7 during the final series, and Richo got to meet her. In actual fact, a lot of the AFL footballers went down and they weren't necessarily invited. They just went down. They wanted to meet this impressive young woman who is the best at what she does. And Richo had a little bit of a wrestle with her. She threw Richo over her shoulder and onto the ground. And
no
he
doubt
said,
she did.
He said he felt like a feather to her. And she's only a tiny, tiny woman. So, I think that's a really good piece.
How do you feel watching women in a physical combat type sports, a la boxing or mixed martial arts?
Well, I think you read that and you take it for what it is. It's an art.
But
and,
personally,
and that's a choice.
How do you go watching it?
Oh, yeah, it's hard to watch.
So you have no problem watching blokes build each other, but not women?
Sometimes it's hard to watch blokes do it as well. It is.
And you've got little Charlotte in at the moment, 10-month-old. If she said to you as a 15-year-old, I want to be a mixed martial artist, what would you say?
Well, it's her choice. Yeah.
So you'd be happy with that?
Well, it's her choice, Allie.
Well, she went on to talk about the things about young ladies, and she's a role model, and gave her thoughts also to the Triple M Hot Breakfast on what women can do and what they should do.
I think that every woman should be encouraged to be strong and to be ambitious and to think for herself and to really expect a lot of how she's treated, you know? And I try to do the best that I can, but, you know, I'm not saying that like I'm saving the world or anything like that, but I like to be an example of how good it is to be a woman and be ambitious.
Yeah, I think she's a pretty good role model.
Absolutely, she is.
When you make statements like that, she makes a lot of sense, doesn't she? But some people won't want to watch females fight in a cage, in a boxing ring, etc. But then, you know, I know Mrs.
Your
Howard
kids wanted to do the same thing. What would you say?
I hope as a dad that if my kids are happy, that I'm happy. I hope, you know, it's easy for me to say that when they're five and they're not bringing those things to the table. I know Erica, the lovely Mrs. Howie, she can't watch women in a boxing ring if it comes on the news, but then she probably struggles to watch men in a boxing ring in that situation as well. So.
No, I'm the same. You know what? It depends. It really does depend on the type of art that they're doing and the type of fight, believe it or not, that it is. If someone's being seriously hurt or look like they're being seriously hurt, then it's hard to watch.
And that's the same male, female.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's hard to watch.
Now, you know, Mick Malloy's got a list of people he wants to fight. One of them's Justin Bieber, I think.
When we get to it, it's an extraordinary list because he's not going out on a limb with most of them.
Well, we might get to his list after 8 o'clock. But
Willie Nelson, he's about 120.
He's the old grey-haired country western bloke.
Yes.
Oh, come on. Charlotte could beat him. She's 10 months old. This is Ronda Rousey on Mick, who wants to fight Justin Bieber.
I think he should probably just palm his forehead because he seems like, you know, he's a small guy. I don't think he'd be able to reach him. I don't know what else he could do besides that, you know.
That would be it.
What could he answer to that? I don't think he could do anything.
I'll tell you what, some of the photos I saw of Justin Bieber this week, Ducky, Bieber might be able to strangle Mick Malloy, and not with his hands either. Charlotte Carey is with us because the babysitter let her down, so I probably should take it a little bit quieter on the radio because she's just about to go to sleep as we speak. But then Jake King arrived and she started crying. Hello, Kingy.
Jakey.
How are you, Duck? Definitely did not crying. That smile on her face, Duck. You saw it and then told me get away from it.
Yeah.
So.
Now you're smiling because this weekend's the Australian MotoGP at Phillip Island. You love your motorbikes, Jakey. There's some superstars. Rossi's leading the championship. Lorenzo. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and you're heading down there with your sort of tough bikey mates, aren't you?
Oh, I'm actually heading down there, Howie, but not so much the tough bikey mates, just the boys get down there and they all take their partners down, and it's a nice friendly event, and I'm heading down on Sunday morning, so for the main race, and I'm actually getting a fair bit excited because Ross is leading the charge, who I absolutely love and adore, and the bloke who I think is the biggest sook on the motorbike, Lorenzo's coming second, and he's in a great spot to actually take the lead at some stage because there's not many more to go.
Jakey, tell us why you took number 46 as your first number at Richmond. Very interesting story.
I had the option of 44, 45 and 46, and I thought about it and thought, as you do when you're a younger fella, you think, all right, who's got a number? Who's attached to him? And 46, I always loved my motorbikes. And the doctor himself, Valentino Rossi, had number 46.
And still does.
And I decided to wear number 46 because of Valentino.
What would it mean for you to meet the great man?
Oh, I think I'd pee my pants a little bit.
What you need to do is come down with me on Thursday because obviously Network 10 covers it. So I'm actually scheduled to go one-on-one with him at 5 to 6 on Thursday. So you could come down as a sounder or a little producer type or something like that, Kingy, and just hang out with him.
I'll bring my own little security tag, Howie, and escort you down because
that's it.
Big name that you are, you need someone looking after you.
No, it'd be great to have a chat with him. We might hear a bit of that on the Hot Breakfast on Friday morning as well. You love your motorbikes. A big event down there, as you say. And Duck, if you've never been, you're going for the first time on Sunday.
I'm actually going Sunday, yeah.
Explain to people what they will think the first time they see one of those bikes do 300 plus around the Phillip Island. So it's actually mind-blowing.
It is. We spoke a little bit off air about the cars and Bathurst, how they actually go around the track. But with the motorbikes, it's so overwhelming that you see them brake so fiercely as they get towards the corner, thinking you can see the rear end of the bike start to wobble. You think that they're going to lose control. They're scraping their knees along the ground to go around the corner, and then to drive out to get to 300k clicks within what is a 3 or 4 seconds. It is absolutely amazing. The roar as they go past you, it's actually very overwhelming. There's so much going on around. The roar, the crowd that gets involved in it, it's one of my favourite sports. I absolutely love it. And not only that, the build-up to the MotoGP, the days before the events that they have down at Phillip Island is second to none.
Have you ever gone around on the track on one of your own bikes?
No, it's been one of my wishes to actually get on it. I had a Ducati 848 at one stage, and that was the last sort of European bike I had.
Mm.
And we worked that one up, and I was hoping I could get on it down there, but I never got the opportunity, and it's been one of my dreams. You can't obviously get on a Harley and ride that around, but yeah, to do that, it'd be absolutely amazing. I'd be, blown away.
I got the pleasure to go, a bloke called Randy Mamela, who used to ride a 500cc bike a couple of years ago with 10, got to go on the back of the two-seater around there. And in our job, you get to do some amazing things. You went in a V8 not too long ago. Yep. To go around there and you go left, 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 and then you get to the Honda hairpin and you go right for the first time, it just brings a smile to your face. It was the most epic experience. Now, so MotoGP, you can still get tickets now at the Australian Grand Prix website. There's tickets galore down there.
I've got to ask you about the young Aussie. I think he's 19 or 20 now, Jakey. Jack Miller.
Yep.
How's he travelling, and what do you think of him?
He's fallen off a few times.
Yeah, he has. He's actually
Weekend, twice in one race, which is not easy to fall off twice in one race, Duck, because when you fall off, that's normally it. But he got it going again, two more laps, and the buddy fell off again.
That's the Australian spirit, though, isn't it? You fall off the horse, get back up. He's actually sitting 18th at the moment, and this is his first time at the Iron, so I think Australians are going to get behind him pretty loudly. So
yeah, he won it on the Moto3 bike there last year, and there was a massive reception for him. So, but yeah, to fall off twice in one race, it's quite a Casey Stoner.
I was going to say, you don't normally
Casey,
get back on.
No. Casey fell off a lot in his first couple of years, then he won 6 in a row. Now, before we let you go, all year you're pumping up a push-up competition between you and the King on Grand Final Day, Dead Set Legends. You turned up, you knocked out 43 in 30 seconds. This is a little bit what you had to say about the Duck who didn't show, didn't turn up.
I was trying to think up a word of how to sum all of this up, and what do I say about the Duck? And let's be honest, probably two-thirds of my vocabulary I can't say on radio. So out of about 10 words, I've come up with the one coward.
Oh. Coward, Ducky.
Oh, coward. I've never been called a coward before.
It's funny, he's still reaching for the tissues now, Howard.
Well, I'll let it be known now, Jakey.
Hang on, what's your excuse?
Well, I've got a hernia. I'm actually going in tomorrow. I've had it for more than a year, so I haven't actually been able to do too much. Been in a lot of pain. Not an excuse, because I'll be back.
Sounding like an excuse.
Bigger and better. So this time tomorrow, well, not quite this time, in 2 hours, 10 o'clock tomorrow, I go in and have an operation. I'll be still here Thursday, Howie. I'll be here the next morning. But it takes about 2 or 3 weeks to recover, and then I'll get back into some training, and we will get it on.
Well, the way I look at it, Howie, is he's got a hernia, he said. So if he did the push-ups and it ruptured, he would have gone in for surgery and had it fixed up. And if he didn't do the push-ups and it didn't rupture, then he'd be going in tomorrow to get the hernia fixed up. Either way, I think that's just an excuse.
All I can say is I showed him your 43 push-ups in 30 seconds.
Hang on,
which
didn't
had on
you
my
retire
phone.
From footy because of a sore toe? Oh.
Yeah, I was doing push-ups. Yeah. I wasn't running.
What did you think of it? I showed you push-ups.
You retired from footy from a sore toe. I've got out of a push-up comp because of a hernia where you're actually not allowed push weight.
I showed you his push-ups on the phone. How did you rate them?
Well, I've got to say, I've got a little bit of an apology to make.
Okay, yes.
And when I got told that you did 100 push-ups in a minute, I said, physically impossible. Howie showed me the footage, although I would like to see it in real life, but he did show me the footage. And I thought that they were half push-ups, certainly not half push-ups. They are full push-ups. I didn't realise how short your arms were.
Oh, see, look, here we go.
No, but that's why you're obviously very good at the caper, but just they were very good, technically very good.
All right, King, you have a good time at the Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix. Get tickets if you haven't already got them.
Look forward to seeing the boys down there.
I'll see you down there.
That's it. You can get the all on Network 10 if you can't get there. We played a little bit of Barack Obama yesterday on the show. We've got a bit of an update about that. Obviously, your man, being Wanye, Kanye, is 2020 president.
Yeah, well,
he's going to have a run for it.
That's what he thinks.
Who's going to vote for him?
Well,
probably half the country. That's the frightening thing.
Well, there's Donald Trump at the moment's winning all the polls over there. So.
Well, he's got slightly more business credibility, I would have thought, than Kanye West.
Yeah. Would have thought.
Would you vote for Kanye?
Would I?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, Barack Obama had a nice little chat in a relaxed environment. I like when I see Barack. He likes to roll the sleeves up.
Nor could I, jacket. Because I'm not American. But
no,
anyway.
That's all right. anyway. I like it when he rolls the sleeves up. He looks like he's going to get stuck in. He had a little bit of a chat about Kanye. This is his thoughts on Kanye running for president.
Do you really think that this country is going to elect a black guy from the south side of Chicago with a funny name to be president of the United States? That is crazy.
I like that.
Well, that's
I like
just, that. That's just a little digging.
Tongue-in-cheek
stuff. Yeah, which I thought was very clever.
He went on to give some tips to Kanye about presidential
election. I loved how he basically said, so he thinks Obama is a funny name, so he obviously thinks Kanye is a funny name as well.
That's it. Here's his tips for Kanye to run for president.
In case Kanye is serious about this whole POTUS thing, or as he calls it, peasy, I do have advice for him. First of all, you've got to spend a lot of time dealing with some strange characters who behave like they're on a reality TV show. So you've got to be cool with that. Love you too. Second, this is a second important tip. Saying that you have a beautiful, dark, twisted fantasy. That's what's known as off message in politics. You can't say something like that. And number three, do you really think that this country is going to elect a black guy from the south side of Chicago with a funny name to be president of the United States? That is crazy. That's crazy.
He's a wonderful speaker. Can you imagine Malcolm Turnbull if he was delivering a message at a rally and someone yelled out, "I love you," and he rolled out, I love you back?
Too.
Wouldn't work.
No, it doesn't. It only works over, most things only work over there. But a little dig at Kanye's wife, Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, that's probably fair
talking
enough.
Talking about reality TV.
I would have thought that's fair enough.
It's very clever, very
as well as being
humorous.
Fascinated by Kanye, you're quite enamored with the whole Donald Trump run for president. I think Donald had, I'm not sure what he's trying to achieve there, but the people are jumping on board, which is an even more frightening situation. Barack Obama, POTUS, the president of the United States, went on and gave his thoughts about Donald Trump.
I think that he is a great publicist. I think there is genuine anti-immigrant sentiment. He knows how to get attention. He's the classic reality TV character. At this early stages, it's not surprising that he's gotten a lot of attention. I don't think he'll end up being president of the United States.
It can't be, could he? It couldn't be. That'll be the end of the free world.
He's winning everything over there. He's winning everything. It is. The reality TV thing is taking off. And obviously, we know Donald's a very successful businessman, but he did his...
You're right. The reality TV thing, as you said, is taking off. Is that not a frightening reflection, Ducky, on the modern age?
Will there be a time when one of the Hollywood stars is a reality TV show star? So clearly, if you're an actor or an actress and you go to make a movie and you have a highly successful career over a long period of time, you get a star. Whereas a reality TV, that's exactly what you are. You haven't been necessarily given that because you've got talent. Some sort of talent.
Well, imagine if you became president.
So answer the question. Do you think that'll ever happen?
What's the question?
Will there ever be a star for a Kim Kardashian or someone like that?
Oh,
that's
a
reality TV
the...
show. Yeah, on the Hollywood
Walk
of Fame.
You. I hope not.
You hope not?
I think you need some talent to be there.
Yeah, okay.
Ronald Reagan was president. He was an actor.
Yeah.
Imagine if Kanye sort of went, they can't vote him in. Well, if they vote Donald Trump in, Donald Duck could become president. You were just asking me whether a reality TV star would ever get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and then we were discussing whether I would vote in Donald Trump for El Presidente. Some startling information has just come to light, Doug.
Well, Donald Trump has a star.
On the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
If I reckon he's got that much coin, he's rubbed out he's rubbed out Duck, where and he's just put Trump. Seriously, there's no way he could have. What, is that for The Apprentice?
Yes, I don't know.
Well, if he hasn't, Kim Kardashian or any of those would have.
We were discussing whether he was going to be voted in as president. It couldn't happen. This is, as was pointed out to me by our great producer, Jay, this is not Ricky Muir in the Automotive Party taking a small off-Broadway job. This is president. This is the man with his finger on the button. This is the man that sits across from international diplomats, chats with the likes of Vladimir Putin, or tries to sort out what's going on in Syria at the moment.
I know.
I'm not sure he's qualified for the job, Doug.
No, I'm pretty sure he's not.
Right, I'm glad we've got to the bottom of that. We came in here this morning and there's a list on the whiteboard of a series of names. And I had to say to Jay, our producer, what's that list? And he said to me, that's a list of people that Mick Molloy wants to fight, Danny Boy, which I found quite extraordinary.
It is one of the more remarkable lists. One, you shouldn't want to fight anyone, but Mick.
But if you have got, to, this yeah, is who wants, Mick wants to fight.
He's got some. He's got some pretty big targets.
Well, let's read them out and see if we agree or disagree.
He's got Bernard Tomic.
Hard to argue with that, Duck. Yeah, okay. Isn't it? There's no real great positives there.
He's got Justin Bieber.
Oh, I got no problem with the Bieber. I got no problem with the Bieber. Fine,
but he's, it's not.
Would you
exactly
like to fight the Bieber or not?
Exactly. No, of course
no,
not.
No, I think he's all right, the Bieber.
But, geez, he's only a little man. Bruno Mars. So there's enough.
I got no real problem with Bruno Mars.
What about this one? Willie Nelson. Willie Nelson.
The bloke with the old ponytail.
He's about 105 years old.
Why does he want to fight Willie Nelson?
I'm not sure.
Not sure that's a fair fight.
He's got Lord Mayor Robert Doyle.
I can see that.
I know the Lord Mayor. I've met him many times. He's a lovely man, but he's certainly. I've noticed here
Is it just a figurehead role, the Lord Mayor?
But I've noticed in the list, it's a list that not exactly he's going to get a lot of fighting back.
Right.
He's got Neil Mitchell, the 3RW radio host. Mm. He's got Red Foo. Is it Red Foo?
Yeah,
Red Foo on there.
Can you see that?
Hey,
can you see that?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah,
probably
I can see that one
few,
too. Yeah.
Probably said a few things. But
someone did try and fight him, didn't they?
It's a remarkable list. It's, I'm not sure. I remember, years ago when you're a bit uptight, and I've had a few people have a crack over the years, and, you know, some of it certainly deservedly so. Mm. So if I was to have a list, my list would be a long one. But
who'd be number one on your list?
But I've gotten over that. So I no longer have those types of thoughts or worry about that.
In your heyday, when you were feeling like that.
I actually don't mind him. I don't mind this bloke.
He's got to name good,
but,
someone here.
But Mark Robinson.
Robbo.
who is very good. But just when Robbo's sort of, his opinion is the only opinion.
Right.
That really, really annoys me. And pots everyone else that has an opinion, because no one's opinion is as important as Robbo's opinion. I don't get that. Especially when, you know, some of the opinions that I've heard are way more valuable and have a little bit more behind them than Robbo's opinion.
Poor old Robbo, he's driving in this morning after he's been to McDonald's and had four or five hamburgers and a couple of Cokes. And he's listening to this and he's just got the complete drive-by, poor old Robbo.
You just said he's driving in having a hamburger and a couple
of... Well, that's probably the way he's rolling out this morning. And you've just given him absolute spray.
What about yourself?
Oh, there's no Ico. Who am I going to fight?
Hey?
Oh,
no. No one wants to fight anyone. It's just a list.
Apart from Robbo. Hello to Robbo out there who's driving in listening to us.
That is a remarkable list by Mick.
It is time for my favourite segment on radio called Duck TV, where the great man beside me runs his eyes over movies, television, etc., and gives it between 0 and 5 quacks, Ducky boy.
Yes.
You've come loaded.
There's been a lot of talk about Pan.
Negative talk.
Well, a lot of negative talk. It only made $40 million in its first weekend, and it needs to make $600 million to break even.
Bringing financial gear to Duck TV now as well. I like it.
So it's got a little bit of work to do, but for all those negative Nancys out there,
right,
like yourself and the hype and everyone else. Now, I actually went to see it, obviously, before it came into cinemas.
Right. A little special preview.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. So for all the parents out there and all the kiddies that haven't seen it yet.
It's Peter Pan, is it?
It's about Peter Pan, obviously, yes. But I tell you what, there's a lot of graphics and everything else, and hence why it's worth, they've got to make $600 million because there's been a lot of money spent. Hugh Jackman, obviously.
What age group are we going
what
to see
What age group?
This?
It's like anything, Hal. That's the one little confusing thing, and you know, having young children, that they get scared. And when you've got a little bit of a nasty character, which, by the way, Hugh Jackman plays in this movie, then you start to, you know, get a little bit concerned that the kids get a little bit scared.
I took Big Penguin to see Thomas the Tank Engine. There was a baddie in that we had to leave halfway through. So I don't think I'm taking to see Pan. Okay, if it was so good, I've got a simple question for you before you give your quacks. Did you or did you not fall asleep in the movie?
I dozed off for a minute. But
it must have been a beautiful
but
movie.
But I dozed off in Rocky 3 as well, so that doesn't mean
Rocky
anything.
Fair. You wouldn't have dozed off in Rocky 4 when he fought the big Russian, though. All right. How many quacks?
Four quacks.
It's got zero stars in the paper.
I know, but who's giving those? Richard, what's his name? Wilkins or whatever. What's his...
I don't know if Richard Wilkins. Lee Patch does that top of your gear, doesn't he?
No, who's Richard? He does. But I thought Pan was okay.
Okay.
San Andreas, which is about the San Andreas Fault.
Right.
In earthquake obviously style, LA. It's obviously about an earthquake.
Who's in it?
And The Rock's in it.
Oh, now, The Rock.
He's the main.
Do you like The Rock?
He's the main. I like The Rock. An action film, obviously, and it's, it's about the fault, and there's a massive earthquake, so it's fairly, it's predictable.
Do they get away in the end? Does Rock survive?
Well,
he doesn't die, does he? Does Rock survive?
It's very, very predictable, but if you like an action movie, and if you like The Rock, four quacks as well.
So The Rock survives.
Yep.
This is my favourite now.
Of course The Rock survives. He saves the world.
You've just given it away. All the people out there, they're like, I wonder if he dies. Now, this is when I really enjoy it, when you move into your favourite genre, reality TV. You've done The Bachelor. We might save The Bachelorette for later in the week. But The Biggest Loser, which I must say is the one reality TV show that I can watch half an hour of.
Well,
in some ways, I find it inspiring.
The Biggest Loser, and to all the people out there, and seriously, you know what I think of getting out there and doing a little bit of exercise. Good on them for going on the show for starters. But I tell you what, this year, like no other, have they complained? I've never seen.
This is the contestants.
This is the contestants. They normally get on there and they're on there for a reason, Howie, and that is to lose weight. Well, I tell you what, Temptation, the people on this year, they just gobble it down.
How do you mean, there was a puzzle.
Well, they put Temptation in front of them, so they put their foods that they love eating, pizzas and
cakes.
They
get them to do the exercise and then put it in front of them.
They put it in front. They tempt them to eat it. And this year they've actually done it. Last night they had to do a puzzle. They had to work out. So it was a memory test.
Right.
I reckon they were deliberately getting it wrong so they could eat cupcakes. It's seriously, and one of the trainers, Shannon, he has to.
Big Shannon Ponton.
He's been just butting heads with his team, just about, you know, getting them to train hard. And now he's mollycoddling, saying, look, forget all that. That's the past. Let's, you know, start again. It's quite interesting to think that that's what they're on there to do. And it just seems this year that the trainers have to go to a lot more work to get them to train. So in terms of watching it, in terms of a show, four quacks as well.
Four quacks.
But the contestants.
How many quacks
do
they
giving
get?
I'd give them one quack because you're on there to do it. You're on there to work.
Lift.
You're on there to, one, for your health, two, for obviously all your families at home and everything else. And they talk about their kids and wanting to get out there and run and kick the footy and frolic in the flowers. And yet they don't.
There's no frolicking going on.
Yet they don't want to do the work. You know what? Give away the temptation and just train a little bit harder.
Maybe come Thursday or Friday, can you give us a Duck TV Bachelorette?
Yeah, okay.
I look forward to that. Duck, I think we're still all enthralled with the Jarryd Hayne story. He had a run again yesterday for the San Francisco 49ers. They led 27-23 with 21 seconds left, but then Eli Manning got the job done, didn't he? And they went down again.
He did. I'll tell you what, it was a very nice take. Can't remember the guy that actually took the catch, but it plucked it over the top, how he had to hang on to it, because if you slightly fumble it, the ball can't leave your hands. It has to be complete control, unlike our marks that get paid. So it was, unbelievable. And Jarryd, the opportunities that he got, I thought he did a pretty good job.
Yeah, it was good to see the Aussie punter. I think it's Brad Wing roosting it down the ground. I think he might have got a 16-yard punt return at one point, Jarryd.
I'll tell you what, that was the one that he took on the boundary. It was actually a very, very nice punt because it went long, wide, right to the sideline.
Yep.
And Jarryd actually had to go back and take it. I don't know what it is I get whenever I know that he's going to receive it, and they actually said, Jarryd, hey, there's an Aussie kicking it and Jarryd's going to receive it. I get nervous straight away and I just think, don't drop it, don't drop it, don't drop it, don't drop it.
And he had that horrible incident, didn't he? And then last week he went for one of his own teammates, cleaned him up, but he'd done the wrong thing there. Apparently, nearly scored a touchdown. 8-yard run, got past two defenders, was right near the line. This is how it went down.
The Aussie, Jared Hayne, the one-time rugby player, who's in the backfield. And they give it to him, and he takes the ball to the 3-yard line. A very interesting case. They bring him to camp. He was one of the great rugby players in the world. He said, oh, you know, I've done all I can there. Let me try the NFL, and here he is.
Here he is, and there he is. That was a nice run.
Nice run. It was nearly our first touchdown in the history of Australians playing NFL. But, Duck.
I know. I know what you're going to say.
Well, can you tell our American brothers and sisters who are professional commentators he was a rugby league player, not a rugby player? Okay. If you're playing rugby, you're playing Super 14s, you're playing for the Wallabies. Well, if you're playing for the Parramatta Eels, you're playing rugby league.
Well, the problem here in Australia, Howie, is there are plenty of people that call it rugby here as well.
Well, that's so incorrect.
They do get confused in America. They even call AFL, Aussie Rules,
rugby players.
So they get it wrong, but you're right. It is rugby and it is league. And it's as simple as that. And there's obviously a big difference in the two.
Isn't it funny how I haven't really had much of knowledge or interest in the NFL as a general rule? A lot of footy boys do. But I'm starting to try and educate myself watching Jared Hayne. I've watched probably 3 games in my life, and I sit there now and I say, oh, that Colin Kaepernick, get rid of him. He's no good as quarterback. You just become an instant expert.
Played well yesterday. Had a really good game, ran the footy well, passed it well, which is something that he hasn't done in the first few rounds.
What would
because
you know?
I watch it.
Oh, do you now?
Yeah. Now, I don't study it, but I watch it enough to know that he was under a lot of – by the way, Manning, who plays for the Giants.
Eli.
Yeah. He was under all sorts of pressure as well. The first 2 rounds, he was terrible, but he's fought back and then threw the winning touchdown yesterday in the remaining seconds of the game. So all of a sudden, he's a hero. That's how quickly you can go from hero to zero. No different to our game here. I mean, some blokes, they play a bad game and we're all saying, you know, drop him, get rid of him, and then the next week he's a superstar.
I think Mick Molloy went to the game in New York yesterday and he caught up exclusively for the Hot Breakfast with Jared Hayne. That'll be on next week on the Hot Breakfast.
Another one Mick wants to fight, is it?
Oh, I don't think he's... I think he'd have more chance with Willie Nelson than Jared Hayne.
I was going to say, there'd be one that he wouldn't pick.
Yeah, I don't reckon. I reckon he'd be better on taking the Bieber than the Hayne train. Duck, it's a funny industry, the one we work in, media, where you don't get any feedback in television or radio basically until you get sacked, do you?
True. You don't... you don't get told you're doing well, or you don't get told you're doing poorly until you get that phone call.
To say you're outski.
Yeah.
Well, we were just reviewing a bit of audio from Jared Hayne by a wonderful, wonderful commentator, Al Michaels. He's been in American sport at the highest level for a long time. This is how he called Hayne yesterday.
The Aussie, Jared Hayne, the one-time rugby player, who's in the backfield. And they give it to him, and he takes the ball to the 3-yard line. A very interesting case. They bring him to camp. He was one of the great rugby players in the world. He said, oh, you know, I've done all I can there. Let me try the NFL, and here he is.
Here he is, and there he is. That was a nice run.
Rugby. That was the issue we had, yep. Because Jared Hayne was a...
league player.
Not a rugby player. Mm-hmm. So we thought Al should get his facts right. It's been pointed out to us that this man is one of the greatest commentators in the history of American sport. Possibly we went a touch hard. He was back commentating in 1980 at the Winter Olympics at Lake Placid, where one of those most famous moments in ice hockey, the Miracle on Ice, where the amateur Americans were taking on the might, the powerhouse of the Russians.
Yep.
And he brought a bit of this gear to the table.
Now Johnson, 19 seconds. Johnson over to Ramsey. The Legionov gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Silk. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! Unbelievable.
Brilliant commentary.
Yes.
Were we a little bit harsh a little bit early on Big Al?
Well, you were.
Well, it was me, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe he's
all
trained
you.
Off a touch.
All you.
Well, maybe he's trained off a touch. We've got a little bit of feedback on the Twitter, which is always nice. Brick and Scott, you gave Pan 4 stars in, or 4 quacks out of 5, the new movie by Hugh Jackman. Mark out 03, is Duck serious? Pan is being called the biggest flop of 2015 with a link to Rotten Tomatoes, which said it should have got 0 stars.
That's right. So each to their own, and I didn't mind the movie.
I got a touch of feedback too from Matt Reed, Reedy yep. _23. I like to call you Ducky Boy. It's one of yep. our little nicknames. We know each other well.
I've been called worse.
That's right. Come on, Wayne Carey 27. You can't continue to let this flog. I say flog. Mark Howard 03, call you Ducky Boy. It's bloody insulting. Hashtag sack this flog Duck, which relates to me. As
like
a team.
It. I actually like it.
What are you meant to back me up
here? I like
here?
It. I don't mind the name, but I like all of that.
Oh, crikey. Patrick Dangerfield, he's gone to the Adelaide Football Club from Adelaide to Geelong, picks 9-28, and the young man, Dean Gore. We'll get your thoughts on in a moment. This is what Paddy had to say to Gary and Bill yesterday on the Rush Hour.
You know, I grew up down the coast. I played for Anglesey, and then when I'd go watch AFL football, I'd sit on the Moorabool Street side and stand on a milk crate. So, you know, that was AFL footy for me. That was Cadinia Park, and it'll be a pretty special feeling to be able to run out on that ground and have that as the home base. So it's certainly very exciting.
Isn't Bill excited? What do you think, firstly, about the deal, 9-28 and a young man?
Oh, good on him. Wrapped it. He's got to go home. Dream come true by the sounds of things to get back to the club and the area that he grew up in. And good on him. I think it was well handled by him as an individual, I thought, during the year. And the way he went about it and conducted himself says that he's got great strength above the shoulders. He's a very determined young man. Won the beat. First, best and fairest. All-Australian. So did everything that you'd want him to do. And now he finally gets to go home. I think it's a great result for everyone.
How do you see the system? Is there a flaw in the system where Paddy's had to been forced, as have players before him, to lie?
Well, that's the environment that we live in, and
is it the correct environment?
No, it's not. We live and work in this environment. That's one of our jobs is the media. And yet I think that's the very reason why players lie, because we saw Lockie Henderson and other people.
Well, they're forced to. They've got no choice.
That's right, because when they don't, then all of a sudden the clubs can have a choice then not to play you and all sorts of things. So it is an environment. I wouldn't like to see it like the rugby, where you've actually already signed for another club while you're playing. But that's not the case in AFL. But I think as far as coming out and being honest during the year, I honestly don't see an issue with it, but clearly the players and we as the media are not ready for that, because the way the Henderson and other people were handled, and there were some people that were saying it was terrible. Even coaches joined in. Paul Ruse said, you know, didn't like it.
Well, the CEO of the AFL, Bill McLaughlin.
Yeah, even he chimed in exactly right. So that was disappointing. But, you know, there's some other big, obviously Carlisle, St Kilda not prepared to give up, pick 5 for Carlisle, which I thought might be the case. So there's still a lot of work to be done there. We're still not anywhere near America, where there's still feelings and there's still a lot more, I think a lot more thought that goes into it. That's not as cutthroat. Yep. As it is in America. So
there's still more club loyalty than there is absolutely in the US system. So what does this do for Geelong? Dangerfield comes there. I tell you what, Joel Selwood's the happiest bloke in Australia at the moment. He gets Scott beside him, who's another in and under type player. They might get Zach Smith to help them out in the ruck, and they're talking Lockie Henderson. I'm not sure whether he's forward or back for the Cats, but what does this do for the Cats next year?
We'll add Mitch Clark into that, who, you know, if he can get himself right.
He's a star if he's going.
Yeah, all of a sudden, then they go straight back into the so-called window. I think, you know, they're a real chance. And I know Paddy said yesterday, you know, that's not the case. One player doesn't. But I tell you, I reckon the happiest man at Geelong, and it'd take everyone, even the coach, Joel Selwood.
Yeah,
I reckon. Because he's getting his brother back,
yep.
But because there's going to be another bloke that someone can tag at that footy club.
You always say to me, a player's worth what the market dictates, which is absolutely correct in any situation. Reported today that Jeremy Howe and the Demons haven't been able to come to an agreement on money. I've heard figures from anywhere between 500, maybe 550 thrown around was what Jeremy Howe was after. You always have to take those figures with a grain of salt, but I will ask you, and try and give me some form of direct answer. What do you think Jeremy Howe's worth?
Oh, look, in simple terms, he's probably not worth that sort of money. But I, as you said, I think you are what someone's prepared to pay for you. So I think he's probably done that knowing that Melbourne are not going to, and he wants to get out. Kangaroos, there's some interest, some other clubs. I still don't think he's found his correct position. I think he's been played here, there and everywhere. I think he needs a little bit more stability in his footing.
Where is his correct position?
I think, well, there's talk of wing forward. Is it wing, half back? I'm not convinced of his best position yet.
Well, the contested mark is about the most valuable thing you can do in modern footy, and that's his strong point.
Well, okay, you call that a contested mark. That's when he has the run at it and jumps in and over players. A contested mark is more the body on body sort of.
So he won't be allowed to do that forward regularly?
Well, he's not that type of mark. He's the jump, you know, gets a little bit of room to jump at the footy. So, look, he's talent and his highlights reel is as good as anyone. So, look, 550, it's probably too much.
The one that's snuck through in some ways because it hasn't involved a Victorian club in this part of the world, Jack Redden, pick 17, Brisbane to West Coast. I think he's a great footballer. Like, we don't see him up here. Brisbane have had their problems. In a team like West Coast, we talked about Matthew Suckling and how he goes from a wonderful team to a developing team and how that affects his footy. And Des Headland, who went from the great team at Brisbane to the lesser team and then struggled a bit. I reckon a bloke like Jack Redden, who's really good at Brisbane, gets to West Coast and he's got Pritis around him, he's got Maston around him, he's got Gaff and Shuey. I think he could go to a whole nother level. I reckon he's a great pickup, Jack Redden.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And the sad thing for Brisbane is the players are just jumping ship.
Yeah.
I mean, Ace is, they're not sure what is going on with Ace, so he might be gone as well. They just can't keep their players in Brisbane at the moment. I don't know what's going on, but he's got a lot of work to do, Leppa.
One of the legends of the sport creates a little bit of magic at the mountain and secures his sixth victory in the 1000. And Stephen Richards,
yeah, in his dad's footsteps.
Victory number four for Richo. Awesome stuff.
Beautiful.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends Do Breakfast, Mark Howard and Wayne Carey. Our man Greg Russ calling all the action from Mount Panorama. We've been looking forward to speaking to the six-time Bathurst champion, Duck Craig Lowndes, all morning. Finally, he's polished up his sixth trophy. He's on the line. He's ready to go. Hello, Lowndesy.
Good morning, guys. Thank you very much. It's it's nice to talk to you guys, especially after what happened on the weekend.
Oh, congratulations, Craig. A wonderful result. It was great to see you once again on the top step at Bathurst. A couple of days later now, you would have had a bit of a chance to reflect and probably just soak up a little bit of the glory and all the well wishes and the thanks and the pats on the back.
Yeah, look, I think that the first night, Sunday night, was pretty was a late night. By the time we packed the garage down, got everyone out, we had obviously a team dinner. It was a pretty quiet night, to be honest, because I knew that Monday was going to be a mad Monday with media and running around. We had to drive back to Sydney, do the press calls and everything else. But actually last night was the first time that we got together, and Richo and I were actually able to actually sit down and have a dinner together and reflect on what we had achieved. And it was really nice. It was something that for Richo and I, we've grown up together very similar in our backgrounds in go-karting and obviously Formula Ford and raced against each other for a number of years. But now to come together and put it together has been sensational.
Congratulations, Craig. Fantastic effort. Six, it's quite remarkable when you think about it. Only one man more, the great Peter Brock. I've got to ask you, how long do you let it sink in? How long do you enjoy it for? Because clearly you've got to move on to the next race.
It's going to be a quick turnaround, unfortunately. Bathurst, back in the day, used to be the last race of the year, but now it's you got to keep moving on. It's, I suppose, not like the AFL Grand Final. That is it, and the guys in the team get a chance to now reflect and sort of sit back and think about it. But we've got to move on. We've got 2 weeks, and we're into the Gold Coast 600, and that's something that concludes our endurance part of the year. And then we've still got New Zealand, Phillip Island, and Homebush to go. So it is... a bit of a shame that you can't reflect on it as long as you'd like, but really for us, it's we get today to do some more stuff in Sydney to run around, and then we basically got to drive home back to Queensland and get ready for the Gold Coast.
Craig, being back there personally for the first time, I think it was 7 years since I was last back at Bathurst when 10 had Bathurst previously, and getting to have a walk or a jog around the track, you forget with that time away, and we can't. I was trying to explain to Duck that television unfortunately can't do the mountain justice in the fact that you see how steep it is and how steep the runoff is. It must be a remarkable place to drive around. It's difficult to see just how frightening it is, but when you go and jog around it, you think, God, how do these guys drive around here time and time and time again?
Oh, I think you've done well to jog around it.
It was slow. It was real slow. And once I got to the top, I was like, I'm cooked here. I forgot how steep it was.
Well, it is. It's one of those things that, it is a mountain, and it really is. The elevation change is huge. The lap distance and length is amazing, and of course, doing 161 laps around the place, it takes 6 to 6.5 hours of the day to actually race it. So it really is an amazing place, and you're right, TV unfortunately probably doesn't capture the whole element of the mountain as well as it probably, you wish it could. But when you go there in person, as you said, even if you've been there many years ago and you come back to the place, it is an amazing. It's got an aura around it. It is one of the special places for us in motor racing. It is our grand final, and for me, I've always said that if there's one race or any race that you'd like to win, Bathurst is that race, and of course, we're still in the hunt for a championship, but you know, really at the start of the year, if you'd asked me if it was a championship or a Bathurst, I'd definitely say a Bathurst. And so I don't want to be too greedy, but now we've achieved that, we want to focus on the championship.
Craig, how tough is it as a competitor to see Chaz Mostert on the Friday have that massive stack? I think he broke his wrist, his leg and all that sort of stuff, and then to get into the car, or is that just part of the job?
For us, it's part of the job, but you know, you got to understand, I suppose, and it's a little bit of a wake-up call for us, of in a sense of you know, what can unfortunately happen. Chaz made a little mistake going down the mountain, which is quite easily done, and of course, everyone saw the consequences. It really is you know, a brutal place at times, and but I suppose also the safety of the cars. You know, just again to see the onboard camera of what Chaz went through inside that car was quite incredible. But you know, to have I think obviously a broken leg, I think he's got either a broken or a fractured wrist. You know, is quite incredible. And you know, and also to the marshals post was absolutely destroyed with the back of the car, and you know, the four guys and that were on that post all dived out the back out of the way, and it was quite incredible. No one else was hurt or injured any further, but it is a bit of a wake-up call. The rest of the day was cancelled, and of course then we had to move into the Saturday. So I suppose, thankfully, we didn't have that, had to drive that day. And I suppose we all could reflect and all get together as drivers and, you know, make sure that everyone was safe and sound.
Six times Bathurst winner Craig Lowndes is with us on the Dead Set Legends Do Breakfast. Triple M, Lowndesy, your teammate Jamie Wincup, last year ran out of petrol on the final lap. This year, the safety car comes out. You, Dak, dash into the pits. In a normal situation, Duck, Jamie was told to come into the pit, so he'd have to pause while Craig was getting his pit stop done. So Jamie decided, no, he was going to stay out there and then pass the safety car, apparently under yellows. How was the team reaction? Because your man, Roland Dane, who runs your show, is a pretty serious type of operator. I wouldn't have thought he'd been that impressed by what he saw.
No, look, to be honest, you know, since basically greeting the checkered flag, we've been flat out running around doing other stuff. I know the Sunday night when we had our team dinner that, you know, Jamie was a little quiet, and I'm sure that, you know, he's probably a little bit disappointed in himself. We'll go back to the workshop in the next couple of days and back in Brisbane, and we'll analyse, we'll have a download of what went on over the course of the weekend, and, you know, and that'll be pretty intense. I'm sure there's no doubt that not only, you know, obviously that incident that you've talked about, but there was many others that, you know, went on over the course of the weekend, and we'll make sure that no stone's not unturned to make sure that we go back there next year with better and faster cars. So, you know, who knows? Look, I don't know what, you know, Jamie may have thought there was a better option. Again, we'll have to sit down and analyse, have to understand his side of the picture. I'm sure, as you said, Roland, you know, is very focused and very, military decision at most times, and make sure that doesn't happen again.
Craig, as we let you go, just two quick ones from me after spending the week in Bathurst. Did you go to the pizza shop with 23 different pizzas, none of which have pineapple on them?
Yeah.
Did you go
no,
there?
I didn't.
Would you call that un-Australian? Would you call that un-Australian?
Oh, definitely un-Australian. I think that I always loved the Hawaiian pizza when I was growing
up. That's it. That's it.
Now that I know that there's a shop there without, was it 25 or so pizzas?
That's
without, I'll have to go and check it out next
Well,
year.
They thought it was Darlinghurst, not Bathurst. And finally, did you pay $500 for a hotel room that leaked every time it rained and smelt like there was a dead rat under the bed?
No, I've got to say that we brought the caravan down and we had a bit of peace from home. So, no, we were all good.
Can I stay in your caravan next time, please?
No problem. Come knocking.
Craig, congratulations. Six Bathurst wins is an extraordinary effort. Good luck for the rest of the championship series. Drive well and stay safe.
Thank you very much, guys.
The friendliest, most patient with fans athlete
that.
In Australia.
I've
across all sports. It doesn't matter how long the line is, he will sign autographs, and he says that's because that's what Brockie taught him.
Good on him.
So much to come on the show. Tomorrow, Neil Danaher, Daryl Beatty to talk MotoGP,
man,
and Nui Takoa to bring us up
Nui,
all things
yeah,
from
all
the paper
gossip.
And entertainment. Thursday, Jack Riewoldt and Christopher Judd.
Oh,
Friday, the Great White Guru.
Great White Shark.
Greg Norman is coming in for a chat. I'll be a bit nervous about that.
Why?
Because if he looks you in the eye...
He's not going to bite you.
No, there's few sportsmen that look you in the eye like he does, and you think, I don't want to ask a stupid question here.
He used to play Aussie rules, he said.
Did he?
Didn't even know the positions, but anyway.
Sounds like that's a stupid question. Ask him. Hope you have a wonderful Tuesday. This has been Mark Howard, Wayne Carey doing the Dead Set Legends on Breakfast, Triple M.